my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, August 10th, 2010. I'm Jimmy Carbone. Co-host is Ray Dieter. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. GreatBrewers.com is one of our favorite resources for all things craft beer. Test your beer knowledge, find great beer in your neighborhood, and check out the events calendar, all on GreatBrewers.com. Welcome, Ray. How are you doing today?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. I got here on time today, unlike last week, but everything's good. How are you doing, Jim?
Oh, it's good. It's a hot summer night.
It's a hot summer radio experience, actually. Apparently, the air conditioner is not working in the studio this afternoon, which, who needs that, actually? Because we're so cool with our beer and our food and our guests. We don't need air conditioning.
And our special guests, we get Christian Papanicolaou and Bobby Helen from Resto, which is a great beer-scented restaurant. Welcome, Christian and Bobby.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is the T. Gavra Hopka. The Singing Blonde is what we're drinking. It's a great beer from 12% Imports. Good friend of all of ours, Brian Ewing. He's been on the show a few times.
Good man.
We're really excited to have you guys. I mean, to me, Resto is one of those few restaurants that's really doing great beers and great food, and you do it really well. Why did you, you know, what was your interest in doing more of a beer-centered restaurant or developing a great beer list at a restaurant, Christian?
You know, bottom line is a lot of friends from Belgium and was going over there for weddings and things like that. Actually drinking a lot more wine over there than beer at the time. But, you know, at the time I just, you know, local seasonal food and sort of using off cuts and just making sure whole animals are used and getting sort of the down and dirty of what we think raw honest food is about.
You said whole animals. What do you mean by that?
Whole animals, like the whole animal, you know,
like from everything. Yeah, the hooves, the ears, the tail.
The whole, all the insides. And, you know, it's not that people weren't doing good food with beer. It's just a matter for us. We wanted to like really change the mentality with, there were so many restaurants like focusing on food and doing great food. And obviously wine and cocktails were really coming about. And I just wanted to make sure we were pushing the idea that, hey, you know, like people should be drinking beer and wine at, you know, equally in this city. And yeah, that's sort of really where it stemmed from. And
well, that's great. I mean, the reason we asked you to come on tonight is our special guest, Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery, just walked in.
He's sweating already.
And this is going to be our first beer and food pairing show, since we have Garrett, the master of Brewmaster's Table, and also the author of The Good Beer Book from 1997, which is the first beer book I ever bought, even before I bought Michael Jackson's book. And have you guys ever seen this book, The Good Beer Book? We're covering time right now because Garrett just walked in, and he's pulling out Local 2 and Sriracha Ace, yeah, some of his great new beers from Brooklyn. And what's that?
Oh.
A special unlabeled bottle. Hey.
Unlabeled bottle is always the good thing. Right?
All right. So Garrett's going to sit down, and we'll talk a little more. Christian, tell us a little bit about your feelings of beer and food pairing. Are there any favorite pairings that you have?
Definitely. You know, I was sort of a wine geek first, and, you know, before I was a sort of a beer nut, and I think it stemmed a lot from that. I'm always sort of having the thought that challenging my palate is like the way I want to go. So things that are interesting, things that like I haven't tasted before, finding ways to sort of not just go like, okay, you know, we want like light beer and light food, or dark beer and dark food and things of that sort. It's really a matter of just like, well, you know, what do I want to eat and what do I want to drink, and let's force them to go together, as opposed to just like trying to think more. You know, wine pairings have always been like so very precise, and I'm thinking like, let's not make it precise.
You were matching up beer with food by color.
Yeah, totally, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's, no, not in that mindset. You know, it was like people are like, oh, I got to drink fish and white wine. You know, like that mindset to me is like, I'm like, no. You drink what you want and eat what you want and find a way to make it work. So, you know, pairings of beer, it sort of went the same way. I just said, let's drink stuff that's yummy and eat stuff that's yummy. And like, let's, if it works together, it works together. And what you end up finding is that there's a lot better combinations that you're going to find, because you're not necessarily thinking that that's going to be the perfect pairing, but sort of by it's sort of by accident. You know, really, I have zero experience doing any of this.
You're just making this all up right
totally
now.
Totally making it up as I go along. But yeah, you do. I mean, you find out that like sour and salty, you know, I mean, I guess it's probably boils down to the same concepts of sour, salt, sweet, and you know, all go together. You know, you need to find the way to go together. But you know, some of these beers that I brought to drink today are in that mindset, funky and sour and sort of, you know, super esoteric. That's what I want when I'm eating, because it challenges the food, especially with stuff that Bobby does. Is, you know,
but also I think like when you have, I'm sorry,
Garrett, go.
No, I was just saying that.
Hi, Garrett.
You know, it's hello. How is everybody?
Hi, everybody's going good.
Sorry, I got stuck in that famous Williamsburg traffic, Bushwick traffic. I you know, it's interesting to hear Christian talk about it, because it really is. He's approaching it the way people actually eat. I'm coming from a background of having, over the years, done about 700 beer tastings and dinners in a bunch of places. So, in a way, the beer dinner is a form of performance, if you like.
Absolutely,
where the pairings themselves are actually a big part of the performance. And therefore, I approach things from a much more systematic point of view, where I want things to be not only successful, but hopefully really spectacular. So I want to make sure that doesn't lead me to take fewer chances, but I definitely have a very distinct mindset about how things are going to work and why they're going to work. And when I was working on the Brewmaster's Table, the interesting thing was finding a way to put that into English, because it is like writing music, I think, something that you actually do in your head, which is a creative process, and then you have to try to explain to somebody exactly how it happened. Yeah. And it's a very difficult thing to do.
That's very true. I do these beer and cheese pairings at DBA on the first Tuesday of every month with Martin Johnson. I don't know if you know who he is, the Joy of Cheese. And we sit down a few days beforehand, and we go through the cheeses that he selected, and I try to pair it up with different beers. And it's really... it's rough. And what you said exactly, it's like trying to go back and justify it. It's like, okay, this tastes good with that, but why does it taste good? Why does that work with that? And when you have to speak to it, when you have an audience and you have people listening and they've paid money to taste these things, now it's like, okay, here's why I chose this beer with that cheese.
And in a way, if you're winging it, it's kind of like getting on stage and jamming, in a way, and you expect people to just kind of go along with whatever your jam is. But, mm-hmm. you know, if people have spent, you know, sometimes rather a lot, yeah, as you said, for, you know, for a dinner, you want to show them some spectacular pairings and be able to talk about not only why did it happen, but how can you apply what you've seen here today to your actual life.
Right.
You know, so, which is also what the Brewmaster's Table was about. So for me, it's interesting because there are still any number of pairings that I've run across, especially with things like chocolates, where I have had some very successful pairings that I still to this day have not managed to deconstruct in my head exactly how it happened so well. Everybody said wow and it was incredible, but I can't find, you know, I'm still trying to put together the threads. Whereas most pairings, I have a very distinct idea of exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is what I expect to happen. But then every once in a while, something does throw you a curveball.
Well, we're going to have some fun today, because I know that Bobby Helen from Resto is going to make some food for us. And we'll try to do a little bit of tasting on air, some food and beer pairings. And especially you can talk us through, you know, some of the rationales. And most of all, I like to hear your favorite pairings. When I first saw Brewmaster's Table, I was joking before that one time I had to do my first beer and food dinner at Jimmy's Number 43, and of course I went to Brewmaster's Table for some cheat notes. We've got a book in front of us. It's the Good Beer Book. It's your first book, and I love it because I got it in 1997, and it was my first beer book.
I don't think I was
before,
born yet.
Yeah, Michael Jackson. But
I'm wondering, do I have one of these myself? I think I might have one or two.
Well, you can look in. I have my notes. They're my favorite beers of 1997.
Oh God!
But how did you go from that to Brewmaster's Table? I mean, there's a lot of time in between.
There's a lot of time in between. I think a lot of beer dinners in between, and it was a book that was really, in a way, kind of burning a hole in my pocket. I mean, I had something that I wanted people to know, which was that beer has a much wider range of flavor than wine does, and I say that as a wine geek. But it's just true, you know, and brewing is a lot more like cooking than it is like winemaking. So, we can use caramelized flavors, roasted flavors, flavors of heat, which don't exist in wine, essentially, outside of, say, Madeira. And you have so many different elements to work with. If I want to infuse coffee into the beer, I can do that. So really, as a pairing tool or as a pairing drink, beer is spectacularly more versatile. And people were walking around without this knowledge, but the beer was right in front of them the entire time. So they got the food and they got the beer, and they're not having the fun that they could have with it. And that was the point of Brewmaster's Table, is to say, you know, here's something you've been missing out on. It will cost virtually nothing, and it's going to improve your life on a day-to-day basis. Shazam. And that, and it's great to run into people who have, you know, read the book, and they said they went out and they started picking up this and that, and they got the Shazam effect, which is exactly what I wanted to do. So that's cool.
That's great. Ray, did you remember anything about Garrett from the old days?
Garrett from the old days?
Well, the other reason is whenever people come on, usually they start talking about Ray. They say, oh, I went to Ray's DBA in 1994. I was inspired to open Heartland Brewery or something.
I'm looking around for the power cord right now. in case I have to yank it out. I mean, Ray's got the ancient dirt, you know?
you know what I do remember, though? I remember when we first got our hand pumps for the cask ales at DBA on First Avenue, and there was nobody in New York City that knew anything about it. And then I went to the Manhattan Brewery down in SoHo, and Garrett, that was like one of your first places. That was
the only other place I
ever worked. Yeah, because I knew you from the Craft Brewers Guild, the home brewers thing over on 7th Street.
Yep.
And then and I got these hand pumps sent over from Nottinghamshire, and they came in a crate, and I had no idea what to do with them. I mean, I knew what I wanted to do with them, but I didn't know how to do it. And I called you, and I called a cabinet maker, and we had a meeting. And I looked at your hand pumps at your place at the Manhattan Brewery, and then you came over, and we sat down and looked at the parts. And like, we kind of do you remember that?
Yeah, I'd forgotten. But
what year was that?
1994.
Wow,
or five, maybe 95.
Yeah,
early 95. It was wintertime, and we figured it out. And those pumps have since died because they had leather gaskets.
Right.
And the pumps themselves, like they just seized up.
They were probably technically dead when we got them, you know. But we resuscitated them long enough to get out some last.
Yeah,
words.
They were there for about 10 years, and they cost $10 each at a boot sale in Nottinghamshire. And
they're worth more than that in ebony and brass.
Probably. Absolutely right. They're hanging in the wall now at DBA First Avenue. They're mounted up there. They're like it's like a trophy. But yeah, that's kind of how we met, putting that puzzle together with those hand pumps. Good All times. Right.
Okay, well, in retrospect, okay, that story you can tell. I'm trying to think of the ones that I yeah, don't want you
we
to.
We only talk about beer stories on the show.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, there's things I'm not going to say.
But we're going to take a short break because we take a break every 15 minutes and listen to some cool music that Bree's programmed for us. And we'll be back on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Beer Sessions is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com and supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, GoodBeerSeal.com. We've got some very special guests tonight. Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery, Christian Papanicolaou from Resto, and Bobby Holland, the chef at Resto. I just want to ask a quick question of Garrett before we dig into this luscious food and beer pairing prepared by Bobby Holland. Garrett, in the 60s, Robert Mondavi went around the country and basically tried to convince people that American wines could be as good as French wines. And he was instrumental in, you know, developing the California wine industry. I feel like you're the same person in terms of the American craft beer movement, and in particular in, you know, beer and food pairing and beer dinners. How did you go from being a brewer to being the leader of beer and food pairings in this country?
Well, the first thing I have to wonder is that if I'm to be compared to Mondavi, which I'm sure is kind, where's the money? and I hope never to be called Darth anything. However, you know, it is cool to have been around doing this for a long time and to actually see a lot of the work that, you know, we've done over the last 20 years kind of come to fruition. And at the end of the day, you know, I think that Ray and I can look around and say that essentially we won. I mean, we won. You know, when you go out to a deli or to a restaurant or a bar, you now see a beer culture which didn't exist when Absolutely. We started, and what we're doing, and we had our small parts in helping establish that, and now we get to enjoy it. Now that it's here. So this is probably perhaps the best time to be an American brewer.
But the question is, where's the money? I love that question.
But also, as you go around the world, what's fascinating is that, you know, I was traveling in the days when we didn't really have a great American beer culture. And now to see that American beer is the most respected when it comes to creativity, innovation, and the interesting quality of our beer scene, everybody talks about the United States as being the place to look up to, which is a complete turnaround from what it was 20 years ago.
Complete turnaround. I mean, back when I started, back when you started, you know, we went to Europe on our knees, basically, like, oh, my God, this beer is so good. What do we have here that's going to ever be that good? And now they actually look to us. We've supported a lot of these traditions that have kind of fallen to the wayside in Europe.
And as you probably know, I mean, as you do know, there are a lot of small breweries in Belgium that wouldn't be around now if not for their American markets. So, you know, it's also places continuing that tradition like Jimmy's and Resto that are really keeping that culture not only thriving, but now growing and turning into something distinctly American.
That's great. So you hear the sound of cutlery. And it's our first time having food on Beer Sessions Radio.
Yeah. And it's about time, Jimmy.
It's our beer and food pairing show, which is kind of cool.
I'm just so glad that you didn't bring cheese into this room at this particular time.
Yeah.
It's a little warm in here.
Yeah. It's pretty hard trying to keep everything quiet.
So what?
Forks,
so
knives.
We've got a bunch of sausages here. We've got white sausage.
So the white sausage you have in front of you is a classic Boudin Blanc. So kind of French style, emulsified white sausage, all pork.
Boudin Blanc.
Boudin Blanc,
And it's a French style, not a Louisiana style.
No, not Louisiana style. You get some taste of, like, orange peel. The longer the sausage sits, the less orange you're going to actually taste.
Oh, wow.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, this is mostly cereal, right?
I'm sorry?
Mostly grain?
No, none. We don't use any kind of stabilizer. A lot of recipes call for flour or oat or something like that.
I know the Louisiana stuff is full of rice.
Yeah.
No, we
don't use any like
it's
a
delicious.
Panada or anything like that. Any kind of filler. It's pork fat, some spices, egg, and a little bit of milk.
And a little more pork.
Let's get into it. Let's do a pairing. I mean, Garrett, take it away. You've got Sriracha Ace.
Yeah, Sriracha Ace I originally brought to go along with the calamari dish, but will work well with, I think, everything here. I mean, let's face it. You know, I'm a beer and food pairing guy, but even I will say, all beer goes with all sausages. Okay, you pretty much heard it here, folks. You know, it's true. You know, there's no real stretch to this idea. Does anybody have a glass handy just in case this got jarred during transport?
I like how everybody just put up their glass really fast.
So this is a specialty that we just brought out recently. It's called Sriracha Ace. It is named after the hop of the same name, which was originally grown in Japan. by the Sapporo Brewery, the large Japanese concern, and is now grown on only one farm in Oregon. And this particular hop smells kind of like lemongrass and lemon verbena. It has been used exclusively in this beer, meaning it's the only hop in this beer, and it has the beer style that that we're using here is Saison, which is the Belgian farmhouse style. Very, very dry and re-fermented in the bottle with champagne yeast. Jimmy, before you take the beer away from me, I would like myself to have some beer.
Sorry. At the end of the day,
it's kind of all about me right now.
The guests don't drink on this show. They didn't tell you that?
Thank you.
We didn't sign up for this.
Exactly.
Well, I'm really happy that you're on the show, Garrett. We go way back. I will say that, and I'm always so proud to do everything with you. And so let's say this is the nice Boudin Blanc, the Sriracha Ace. I didn't know that Sriracha Ace was a Saison style, but it makes a lot of sense.
Well, it's very distinctly in that style. I mean, it's super dry and has a really crackling, bright hop character. And it does have some of that peppery quality that you might associate with some of, you know, my favorite Saisons, like Saison DuPont in particular, and those from Blaugis, like De Potre, stuff like that. But really meant to showcase this one particular hop, which I think melds well with that particular beer style.
So you you mentioned Blaugis. Do you feel like you're able to keep up with a lot of the newer or the smaller breweries?
Yeah, I'm able to keep up with a lot of them, but you know, what you find is that unless you're spending your time like reading blogs and whatever else, which I generally don't, you know, at various points you're going to fall behind. There's always going to be 10 or 15 or 20 new beers available in the market.
I always find that my customers like turn me on to these things.
It's
I stopped kind of paying attention to that stuff because my customers were just constantly like, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Have you been there? Have you been there? It's like they keep me totally abreast of what's going on.
See, for me, it's the opposite. I get in front of a crowd, and a lot of them are paying attention to this stuff more than I am. So if I don't keep on top of it, they're going to let me know that my knowledge is, in fact, deficient.
But it's not it's not a competition, Gary.
No, it isn't. But one does not want to have deficient knowledge when one shows up. So you do want to keep up on things. But it's... there's more out there than any of us are going to know about at any given time. So it's what keeps things exciting.
Okay, we have another sausage here. This red sausage, this one here. What is that?
Small red or large?
Large red.
Large red. This is lamb and feta. So we take, you know, a lamb leg, grind it up with feta cheese, and case it. Mm-hmm. You'll get black pepper, maybe a little bit of coriander, good spice, good salt.
So good.
Awesome. Yeah.
And again, it's it's pork fat and it's lamb.
This is great. So this is something, if I went to Resto, are these on the menu?
Yeah, everything we have today is on the menu. We sell a Grand Charcuterie plate. You could get it for one, for two. You could get the large one for one if you want. But we do, at one time, normally we'll have around 10 to 12 different charcuterie items in-house. On the plate is seven right now.
Wow, that's great. And what is the small sausage?
The small one is chorizo. So this is the only one that it's probably like a 60-40 ratio from lean to fat, and you'll get some cayenne in there, some chili flake.
Really
now, good. Now there's how many different kinds of chorizo are there? Because I'm aware of at least three or four.
Oh, there's tons. Pork, lamb, goat. We've done it all, and there's so much more.
Pick your animal, basically, right?
Yeah, pick your animal and put some pepper in there.
That's so good.
As in like chili mask, peppers. Right.
No, it's got a nice spice to it. Not too spicy, but it's got a nice little...
Yeah.
You know, the producers and engineers are looking in the window. They're drooling. We're eating on the air and drinking beer. And this is like going to Jimmy's Number 43 or Resto. And, you know, I'm having a good time. What's the next dish here? This is like some kind of pie here.
All right, you guys have Boudin Noir. So we had Boudin Blanc before. This is Boudin Noir, which is blood sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Blood. It looks like blood. It looks like baked blood.
It's blood pie.
Yeah.
You know, we eat it all the time.
Blood pie. a lot of people do like...
Is this a typical lunch at Brooklyn Brewery?
Yeah, just like my grandma used to make the blood pie, you know, on weekends. You know, she always did it. That's why, one reason we loved her.
So is this still considered a sausage?
Yeah, it is still considered
so
a sausage.
All beer is good with blood pie.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. This is a broken sausage, so it's added a casing.
Cinnamon? Is that cinnamon?
Yeah. Cinnamon. Yeah.
But dry, not cinnamon sugar, like mm-hmm. really dry cinnamon.
A lot of people say that it's almost like a dessert sausage, and then you tell them it's Boudin Noir, and they're like, what's that? And you say,
well, it's
pork
pie, for God's sake.
You say dessert blood pie.
So Christian from Resto, he's telling me that I should try the Rodenbach. It's a vintage 2007 Rodenbach slightly sour beer, oak-aged ale with the blood pie.
Blood pie. Mm. I love that.
A lot of sour beers go really, really well with the charcuterie just because of the fat content in the sausage. It cuts right through it.
I found that too. Like if I have like a real sour goose or something, that's almost, it's meant for food because it's like you almost can't drink it by itself, but you match it with a real fatty stew or something like that, then suddenly the flavors come together.
Yeah, it's all about your palate. You know, you coat your palate with all the fat of sausage, you know, the blood pie, whatever it is, and the beer cuts right through it. Really, really.
Okay, I know I started up with the blood pie thing, but now that we're eating it, I think that we have to call it Boudin Noir. I kind of do.
And on top is a cheddar cheese crumble.
Excellent. So. You know, one thing that you'll notice here, now getting back to the idea of I won't say a systematic approach, but you do have a flavor of iron in your in your Boudin Blanc, you know, that runs naturally from the ingredient, there's a very sort of iron-like character to the beer as well. There's something distinctly, not unpleasantly metallic, but distinctly metallic in this entire beer style, not just this particular representative, but in the Flemish brown and Flemish red beers in particular, and I think that these two things kind of grab onto each other.
Can I get some?
Christian has it. Well, Garrett, let me ask you, so like for some really assertively sour beers like true lambics and gooses, I mean, is this the proper pairing? Some kind of fatty meat dish?
I think fatty meat dish, but also fatty fish dishes work well. I find they work well with oily fish like salmon and fresh sardines. They also work surprisingly well with ceviche, where you wouldn't expect that seafood that is actually sort of cured in acid, usually from lime juice, is going to work well because you have acid and acid, which you would figure makes more acid. But in fact, they tend to cancel each other out to a certain extent on the acid front and then kind of let the flavors, the other flavors of both the shellfish, the fish, and the beer show through in a clearer way. But you can almost think of drinking some of these sharper, sourer beers as being just like putting a squeeze of lemon juice on whatever it is you're doing. And a squeeze of lemon juice doesn't just work on seafood. It's actually surprisingly brightening for a lot of things. And it's something that I have to tell a quick story, but this is pretty good. Mondavi, has a team, and their job is to figure out what makes Mondavi wines taste good, which foods will at least not hurt Mondavi wines when they do stuff. They have a whole team that figures this out. And their chef pretty much figured out and did a demonstration at a tasting I was at once that acid and salt were the major things for making the wines at least taste good, and that you could even make a sweet white wine go with a steak if you squeeze some lemon juice on it and put some salt on it.
On the steak?
On the steak. You know, it was quite a shocking, you know, demonstration. I don't want to use up too much time by running you through the whole thing,
no,
but it was quite a thing to see. And so a little bit of acid is not a bad thing.
So in terms of, like, cultures, we're you know, beer countries and food and beer cultures, as we can say that, do you think that Belgium is penultimate? I mean, for you, would you say, I want to go to Belgium and beer and food pairings and explore the beers and local foods?
They're still the best at cooking with beer. They have, of course, a wonderful beer culture full of wonderful beers. I find that we've actually explored the intersection of beer and food more, perhaps, in the United States than they have there. The Belgians have a wonderful beer culture, but they're also, in their own way, very traditional and very sort of parochial and a little bit sheltered. So we're only now starting to really get fully in contact with the Belgian brewers who were a little bit behind their walls for a long time, and a little bit defensive about the fact that so many American brewers are taking up Belgian styles and approaching from a Belgian direction. And they looked at it and said, well, you know, they're taking business away from us. Whereas what they now, I think, are starting to realize is that the interest in things Belgian is wonderful for them and is only going to, you know, going to increase their influence over the beer world and consequently the sales of their beers.
All right.
Well, that, that
oh. go for it, right?
No, I was going to say that, that's kind of that's what happens here in America. I mean, we take a European tradition, like go crazy with it, and then kind of bring it back to what it is and kind of do it. Well, right now, the best beers are made in America. I really think so. I mean, you can go to Belgium and England and Germany and find some great stuff. It's still there. But, you know, Michael Jackson, you know, I miss him so much, but he was a huge proponent of American beer. Because, by and large, some of the best beer that's coming out right now is American. Like, people like Garrett and other great brewers are just making some great stuff.
Bobby, what's the last meat that we're tasting here?
All right, the last one we have right here is it's lamb again. It's kind of like a spicy breakfast sausage almost. This is totally out of the casing. You can see it's a lot larger. Sometimes we
serve it. It's like a big lamb meatloaf, kind of.
Yeah.
It's a little bit.
Yeah, pretty much, except no filler. So it's pure just lamb meat and some pork fat.
Beautiful. To our listeners out there, we're having an awesome show. So Beer Sessions Radio, we'll take a little break and we'll be back in a few minutes on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and thegoodbeerseal.com. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by greatbrewers.com. For beer education and information, what do you think, Ray? Greatbrewers.com?
My favorite website in the world. I love that. You know, I go there pretty much three or four times a day. I spend a lot of time.
Their event listings are really good, especially amazing. With the Craft Beer Week coming up. I think that, like, we have $10 tastings every Tuesday. They're always listed on greatbrewers.com.
You know, I used to, like, on the internet, I used to, like, check out a lot of porno. But that's all. I don't do that anymore.
Ray, it's a beer show. Now you go to greatbrewers.com.
Exactly right.
Garrett popped the cork on that one.
Garrett should be a producer with that time.
And as is part of our, you know, the Beer Sessions Radio, we get a lot of call-ins and email questions. We have a question for Garrett.
Yes.
Dear Garrett, I remember reading in Edible Brooklyn, you used to go hunting on horseback in Long Island. Really? What's your favorite beer for après horseback riding? From Nat in Brooklyn.
First of all, yes, really, out near Quogue and lots of other places that are now office parks, but mostly in upstate New York. And yes, on horseback and with German short-haired pointers. And there used to be a German short-haired pointer club of Long Island. There may still be. You can go out there and check that out for your weekend leisure activities. I think that after I got in, I mean, back in those days, this was mostly before the days when I was actually allowed to drink any beer. But I think that, speaking of Saison, after you've got in from the fields, that Saison will be exactly the thing that I'd want to kind of hit that spot. So the
Sriracha Ace, it's really refreshing.
It is very refreshing. I think that dryness is one thing that gives it great drinkability and also gives it a great ability to work well with a lot of food.
I remember last summer you came out with the Sriracha Ace on draft, and we had it at a couple of the Good Brew Seal bars. How did you refine that hop?
That was at a trade show. And it was one of those things where I smelled that hop as one checks out a lot of different hops. And hops are like spices. You're checking out different things, et cetera. And I smelled this one, and it was so far out there with that lemon peel kind of character that literally within 30 seconds I could have written that recipe. I knew exactly what I wanted to do with it. It just sort of spoke to me, to the extent, and is very rare, where we're using only one hop in a beer. Generally speaking, we're using a range of different hops. The way, sort of like if Resto came out with a sausage called black pepper and there was only black pepper in it and that was it. It's you usually don't do something which is such a monoculture, but I really wanted to express that hop in particular. It's distinctly itself. It doesn't really taste like anything
else. Hey, Garrett,
else.
I got a question for you. I was drinking the Kelso IPA. Have you had the new batch of Kelso IPA?
I don't know if I had the new batch. I did have some at the BAM Good Beer event recently.
What do you think of that?
Did it have Nelson Salvan in it?
Which
is also another really distinctive hop that brings a lot of passion fruit like characters. And I think that Sriracha Ace, it's one of those flavors that you're either into it or maybe you're kind of not.
I certainly am.
Yeah, I think it's actually really cool. It's one of those things that can be used well, as I think they do there.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it overdone. I've had it overdone well, by Thornbridge Hall doing their Lord Nelson in England, which really expresses that hop in particular in a concentrated fashion, but really does it well.
So we're having a Bobby. What is the calamari we just had?
That calamari is great.
It is great.
Well, yeah, it is great. You're going to have to ask somebody who works in the kitchen here at Roberta's.
Roberta's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Of course, Heritage Radio Network is recording in the backyard of Roberta's, a great restaurant in Bushwick. So they made us a great calamari. It's like a real nice batter.
Flour-battered
calamari. Garrett, what would you...
Sweetbreads,
thank you.
Sweetbreads.
Reading brains?
Power of suggestion. I heard calamari, but... That's our awesome sweetbreads from the Roberta's Kitchen. Garrett, what would you pair with that?
So I took out my headphones and I'm like, those are sweetbreads, right? Because I'm like, those are the most tender calamari I've ever.
That's sort of what I was thinking.
How did you get that technique?
I like.
What I was thinking here was that usually sweetbreads are going to be covered in flour. They're going to have some salt, some pepper. They're going to be fried. There are some other spices going on there, and I love the way that this particular beer, which is Brooklyn Local 2. Broadly within the Belgian strong dark Abbey style, kind of grabs onto that caramelized character from the frying.
Mm-hmm.
Again, really dry, but has a very distinctive sort of raisiny dark caramel character to it. And again, like the other beer, re-fermented in the bottle with champagne yeast, so it has a very sort of direct kind of quality to it.
Hey, this beer is definitely, for me, I had actually brought a double from Westmall, which one of the Trappist ales. I love brown ales so much, and this brown ale, what I sometimes have a hard time with the Belgian browns is that you get so much sweetness in them, and this one just has that perfect balance. Like, browns are something that should be drank. They're not. I think some people think dark beers, and or at least when I first started learning about beers, I thought, well, dark beer, I can have one and it's not really quaffable and whatnot. And this is the kind of beer that you can drink more than one of. And it's got great caramel. It's got, like you said, it has great raisin to it, but it's easy. I can drink it and eat with it and not feel like it's overpowering, or it's just there's so much sweetness to it that I'm it's getting in the way of what I'm eating. It's this is a perfect and a good example of, I think, not getting in the way of something that's like, it looks light. It's not some big brown braised dish and you're drinking brown ale with, and you're saying, this is perfect. Like, this is exactly what I want to do with this.
It's a great beer. I'm getting like a root beer thing going on.
Yeah, I think you get that from the, there's caramel color used generally in root beers, caramel flavor and caramel color.
Right.
And it's usually a very high temperature caramel, you know, that smells and tastes kind of like the burnt surface of a creme brulee.
Right.
Or even Cracker Jacks, you know, and you kind of get that quality to it.
I like now, this Cracker beer, Jack on this.
Yeah, technically, well, you know.
Is there a prize inside, Garrett?
Yeah. It's, Ray, the beer is 9%. So yes, there is a prize inside.
Well, I guess I'm going to not say what I was going to say. I was going to say, wow, I'm a big fan of dark beers in summer, especially lower alcohol beers.
Yeah.
I like this beer in summer.
But that's a good, it's
actually,
a good
what
point.
Is it? It's like 85, 90 degrees in this studio right now.
Yeah, it's at least.
Yeah, you're very optimistic.
Yeah. Thank you for local too.
The brown ale during the summertime, I think, is one of those things. Like people, you know, some people get their mindset like, oh, I drink white wine during the summer and, you know, and red wine in the winter, or light beers in the summer and dark beers. Like, no, this is so refreshing and great.
I think it's all about equal opportunity drinking.
Yeah. Oh, that's the best way to put it.
Let the food dictate what you're drinking.
So
it's like, what are we having? What's going to go good with it? Take some chances.
Hey, you know, we were drinking beer and drinking chilled Zweigelt, which is a red Austrian grape.
Outstanding.
You know, at a barbecue a couple of days ago. You know, so I mean, there's different things that are going to work at different times. But just because the beer is dark doesn't mean that it's heavy. This beer is actually technically extremely dry. And it won the bronze medal at the World Beer Cup this year against Belgian beers.
That was in
the, in the Belgian strong dark category. So I think it's hopefully a good representative of its type.
Garrett, a lot of our listeners have questions like, you know, it's 2 a.m. and I'm going to Bodega, but I want to get a good beer. A customer in the New York area go to a deli or a bodega at night and get a local 2 or a Sriracha A-Sale bottle?
Yes, they definitely can. You know, and I think that's one of the things that really represents the transformation of our beer culture. The fact that, I mean, I have a place a block and a half from my front door run by a little Palestinian couple that don't even drink. And they have 150 or 200 beers in there. And this is not considered like a beer place or something. Right. It's an everyday deli. It's a normal deli. And now that's what you're starting to see. And a book like Brewmaster's Table, the idea was, well, what is all this stuff? You want people pace up and down and back and forth in front of a case like that. And they're like, well, I'm about to spend some money here. I mean, maybe not that much money, but some. We worked hard for it. And what's in the bottle? And that's what you want to be able to tell them. I think that, you know, we need to do a better job as brewers kind of expressing to people, you know, what is this? What does it taste like? Why is it interesting? Who made it? And what do I do with it?
That's absolutely true. And, you know, I've been asked as a bar owner, you know, what do you need me to do? Breweries and distributors come to me and say, what do we need you to do? It's like information. We need information for our customers. You know, you can't compete with Budweiser. You can't, you know, there's not enough hockey tickets or baseball tickets. There's not enough free stuff you can hand out, you know, girls, you know, buying beers for customers. It's information. I mean, people don't come to a bar like Jimmy's Number 43 or DBA. I don't think. For hot babes, they come to drink good things. And
thank you, Ray.
I just maybe they do come for hot babes.
Maybe they do. But what they'll find there is a bunch of good beer. And I think it's kind of important for the breweries to provide that information. Because
that's a good point, and that's why like being able to get local too. And local one and Sriracha Ace Ale in bottle, in New York City. That's a big step up for people.
Well, I think absolutely. That you know what we've tried to do on our website, for example, is I've removed a lot of the references up front to things like IBUs, which refers to levels of bitterness and stuff like that, which doesn't really tell you all that much, and really referred more to what the flavors are and what they might be nice with for dinner, which is what people I think really want to know. The beer you have in front of you, by the way, is a version of a local one. This is not available to the public, but sorry, guys. It's a version of local one, which is aged for 9 months in Woodford Reserve bourbon casks then re-fermented in the bottle with the wild yeast strain, Brettanomyces, which gives you that distinctly funky
So this is going to be
character,
my favorite beer I ever drank in my life
that,
right now.
Typifies a lot of Guz and Lambique styles and is part of the background of the beer Orval when it gets older.
It's one of the privileges of being on a radio show like Beer Sessions Radio get to try the special beer.
This is awful.
Wow. Yeah, terrible. In fact, I think you should give me all yours so that you don't have to drink.
No, I'm just going to tell you. Actually, I'll take it all. Out there, the people out there in Radio Land, you're not missing anything. We're just going to drink it all here.
It's like the food, all this beer, it's not really that good. You really are not missing anything.
So sorry.
I totally agree. It's really just a...
But in terms of beer and food pairings, I mean, this just shows you that there's beers that I might... I always have these levels of beers in my mind. There's like my starter beer, like a good Kolsch or something refreshing. Then I go to like more of a food beer, which is this. And then, you know, there might be another beer, like a good IPA that I just prefer to drink on its own. And then I have like a finished beer, like a strong ale or something. But I love this whole category of food beers.
Well, this is, you know, this is a beer that we served. We served this at Per Se. Last summer, during New York City Beer Week, we had a wonderful dinner with Thomas Keller and Jonathan Benno and their crew. This was actually paired up with a wash rind cheese called Grayson, which is based on Taleggio.
Beautiful, yes, we know.
And you can easily see how that the funky character from the Brettanomyces would really link up with the funkiness of the distinct funkiness of the Grayson. And then we did a couple of beer dinners with Tom Colicchio at Kraft. One in New York and one in Atlanta, and this was paired up with a pheasant dish with root vegetables, and it was in the late autumn, and it was again a really really wonderful pairing with sort of game dishes. So you know, this is I think that beers they each have particular talents, and this one, for example, you know, it's not going to be your best thing with fish. For example, I mean, yes, I can think of some fish dishes where it's going to work, but by and large, that's not where you're going to go with this. You're going to
swordfish steak.
Yeah. You could see that. You could see monkfish in brown right. butter sauce with pancetta, which is a kind of a classic dish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are things that you could definitely do with it, but you would tend more towards game, towards cheese, you know, towards things with that kind of depth to it.
Okay, we're going to put you on the spot, and Christian can help you out. It's Christian from Resto and Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn. Okay, 5-course dinner. Beer and food pairing. You don't have to pick a specific beer, but give us a general idea. Walk us through some classic pairings, 5-course beer and food pairing.
Garrett's going to go first on this one. Because then I could just, like, basically, it's going to get ideas from him. Sorry, buddy. I mean, you're clearly the senior and more professional person, so.
Well, I mean, I like to start with, you can start with a salad, you know, for a place that does salads well. And in that case, you know, I like to generally start off with a wheat beer. The styles are light, bright, and can always be generally followed by other things, which is always important. After that, you might do a fish dish, and you have to decide like how rich you're going to go. You could go sort of as light as turbo or as heavy as something like that monkfish dish that I was talking about, which is almost a more meat type preparation. And the beauty of a beer like Local 2 is that it can actually, it's light enough that, again, it can be followed by something else. I like to have one dish that shows off a caramelized, roasted character with a dish that shows off some of those things as well. So a lot of browning, usually a red meat sort of thing. If you're going to do a cheese course, you have a lot of latitude there. And then distinctly a dessert, usually with either an imperial stout in one direction or maybe a fruit beer in the other direction. Or there are other pairings that can definitely go out on the high wire and show some surprises.
You know, one of my favorite beer cocktails, and I'm not a big fan of that kind of stuff, is your black chocolate stout with La Chalet Frambois.
Yeah?
Well, just a splash of La Chalet in that is what a great combination.
PDT, the great cocktail bar here in New York City, does a great drink from black chocolate stout called the Black Flip. And it's a black chocolate stout, cruising black strap rum,
I love that rum.
And egg, as all flips contain, you know, shaken with ice, and then a little bit of a little bit of simple sugar, and then a little bit of nutmeg shaved on top, and it is awesome. But what I can tell you is that if you decide to do this at home, remember to get all the gas out of the beer. I'm only going to say this once. otherwise, I hope you're wearing a dark shirt.
It's true, yeah. It's like, you shake it up.
So how do you get the gas out of the beer? It's like, you just kind of shake it up and let it...
You pour it back and forth more times than eight.
More times than eight.
Eight is the number of times that I did it last time I tried this in front of a crowd.
And you lost your shirt.
More times than eight is the correct number.
Okay.
Get all the gas out.
And Christian, you do some things called large format bottle dinners, or tell us about some things you do.
We do this thing called large format feast at a resto. So you can basically give us a week and you can order a whole lamb, whole goat, whole pig, whole fish, if you will.
Hey Christian, where is resto located? What's the address?
111 East 29th Street between Park and Lex. So it's in the
Murray Hill.
It's in Curry Hill.
Curry Hill.
It's. You know, and so our large format feast dinners are basically, you know, it's a 3 or 4 course dinner. Bobby makes a nose to tail, so you get the entire animal.
So it's actually my birthday next Tuesday, August 17th.
Yeah.
I just say I want to go to resto with about 10 friends.
You're too late.
I'm too late, but what would I get?
Yeah, so basically, you know, we just did a great dinner for some friends.
Beer and food pairing.
Exactly. We just did a great beer and food pairing dinner for. One of our friends, Sam, who's the chef de cuisine over at Ma Pesh, and so they came in and did a goat, and Bobby basically threw down and, you know, did goat 19 ways, basically. So, you know, we started off actually with the Amuse, which we did triple caramelite. You know, triple caramelite is like sort of fun beer for us. It's like super champagne-y, like definitely one of the most beautiful beer glasses of all time. Big Fleur de Lis, like just, you know, goblet-like. It's like, you know, coming back from
storming
the castle.
So why did you start with that beer?
It's really fresh and light. I mean, I think the yeast
is... it's a good cooking beer.
It is a good cooking beer. I go back and forth whether I just want to drink with this beer like by itself, but it's in a bigger bottle, it gets a little bit more balmy and so a little bit more fruity. So
balmy?
B-A-L-M? Balm. Like the
B-O-M-B.
Like the feeling that you're getting right now in this room. Balm. Balmy.
So it's like when you have a good triple, but it's a little hot on your palate.
It's a little hot on the palate. It's like a little hot. It's a little bit soft. It's not really killing it in the sense of like acid and structure. And the nice thing about it was is that like it was it's super easy to drink. It's got good it has good carbonation. So he did like these little chicken fried goat necks, basically. So he did that with like some kale and whatnot. So it was like fun to start
chicken
with.
Chicken fried goat necks?
Chicken fried goat neck. You try to say that one three times fast.
It's like my grandmother used to make. You know, I just love you saw it Sunday afternoon. Chicken fried goat necks. You know,
we're nice restaurant right now where everything is chicken. It's how many times you can say chicken fried something.
That's so
it's
Garrett's, chicken fried. That's Garrett's New York accent. I love it.
You know what? You got some kind of problem?
So we went, you know, so triple caramelite, and we did in a big bottle. The fun thing about what we try to do at restaurants, it was a 1.5 liter. We sort of kept going from there. And
so large bottle format.
Large bottle. It's just large animal, large bottle.
You said you have even 6 liter or 9 liter bottles. 9 liter.
We're on our way to getting a 15 liter.
In the world of champagne.
Yeah. So it's, so you have Salmazar and Nebuchadnezzar's and things like that.
I know Chimay is trying to come out with some of these large bottles. I've only just heard of that.
Yeah, we have 3 liters of Chimay. I actually almost brought a 3 liter of Chimay tonight, but I figured that we'd all stumble out of this room too. It's real big.
We're going to do that anyway.
Now, have you sorted some of these bottles? Are you there with a saber? Have you sabered some of them?
I have not sabered anything. I don't know if I could do that.
Do you have a
sword?
I think
Bobby could probably. Yeah. Bobby has a big sword, so he could
it. Something I haven't learned how to do, and I kind of think that, you know, we kind of need to go there. It's like in the beginning of a beer dinner. It's
let's do it.
You're out there with a... You know, and
as long as you go first, and
you take the top of the bottle off, it could be
cool. Oh, wait, the lobby.
You still
that.
Brew beer with one hand? That's my question.
Exactly. You know,
I don't want to.
Jimmy, you go first.
Yeah, exactly.
I have sabered a champagne bottle.
Have you really?
I did one time.
Jeez.
So he did go first.
Winter 2003.
And how did that go for you, Jimmy?
It went great. It wasn't a saber. It was a large chef knife.
It's like, I don't want to talk about it right now. I've been in therapy for some time, and I've really been helped.
How did your wife feel about that?
She was my wife at that time, and she still is. But I did get a foot injury, so... So. We can turn the show. Come on, guys. Ask me some questions. Come on. Don't be scared. But this is probably the coolest show we've had because food and beer pairing is kind of the core of what we all do. I mean, Ray's doing, you know, different types of cheese and beer pairings, and Garrett is the leader, and, you know, Resto. This is fun.
It's
you know,
really
this is
fun.
More,
I think,
more than just drink.
Actually, I think we need more restaurant people on the show.
But let me say this, and I'm glad that we had the show tonight because my own feeling is that there are certain beers, and people always call them good beers or great beers, and the kind of beers that you just drink. But when you actually try to pair beers with food, that's really where the beers get separated between great beers and good beers. And I've done that a few times. I've done beer news myself. I'm like, there's certain beers. I'm like, wow, I didn't know that beer couldn't pair with any food until I tried. And then, of course, my fallbacks are all German beers that are wheat pair well with any food. You know, so you get a friend, and they're like, oh, we want to try to pair something with, you know, wild Alaskan salmon. I'm like, oh, easy. German wheat beer.
Well, it is true that the German wheat beers go with, you know, I refer to them as promiscuous in, you know, in my book, just because they go with so many different things. You know, but I think that what we're seeing now is you have a restaurant, you know, like Resto on a relatively small, you know, scale, you know, smaller restaurant, you know, doing great things in their area. In another area, you have 11 Madison Park, which has now, quietly over the last year or so, has built one of the best beer lists in the entire city.
No question.
And really taking it...
for a restaurant.
For a restaurant.
Okay.
You know, extremely seriously. You know, definitely among the best restaurant lists, which, you know, Danny Meyer's restaurants generally have tended to. I mean, he's been a leader in that area when it comes to larger restaurants. And going down to kind of the neighborhood level, you know, where you're seeing places like out in Queens for many years now, Austin Steak and Ale House.
I never heard of that.
Out in Kew Gardens. I've been doing a beer dinner there at least one every year for, I think, 8 years. And it's right next to a train trestle in the middle of Queens. And it has an OTB parlor, I kid you not, actually inside the bar.
You need to go in and pair the beer
with horses
with the bet. If that you know, people like pair like songs and wine and stuff like that, Garrett's going to do.
What's the name? It's Austin. What?
Austin Steak and Ale House. I once did a tasting in
Chicago. What neighborhood in
Kew Gardens.
Wow. Let's
Kew
go there Gardens. After the show.
I think I'm in.
All right.
I once did a tasting where I paired up. This was for a bunch of hedge fund traders in Chicago. I actually paired beers with glass Hutto watches worth north of $50,000 a piece.
You paired beer and jewelry.
Yes, I paired beer and jewelry.
Saying this you're amazing, way more, Garrett. He's way more skilled than any of those.
You're my
guys.
Beer hero.
Yeah, he's clearly.
Oh, I got paid.
The show's over.
Good for you.
He's not wearing a watch, by the way. I don't see the watch on his
wrist. I have a watch from that, and I said as part of my deal, I want to be able to buy any watch made by your company, which is Swatch is the overall they have, Omega and Tissot, whatever else. And even at cost, the only one that I could afford that had a mechanical movement, which is what I wanted, was the Hamilton Jazzmaster, which is actually quite beautiful.
Does it make phone calls? Take pictures?
It does not. It is beautifully, all it does is tell you the time in style.
And I think that's Garrett's last words. And we have actually an extended show tonight. We went from 45 to 60 minutes because of our great guests and our special theme, beer and food pairing. And we'll do a little sign-off. It's Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni, co-host Ray Dieter, goodbeerseal.com and greatbrewers.com. We will see you soon. Ciao.
I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the band.